Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Let's kick off with the main topic of today. Why is SmackDown Live so much better than Monday Night Raw? Why do you think it is?
Well. I think, one, because there's more wrestling. Somehow, in 2 hours, they managed to have more wrestling with longer time in, put into the matches. More stuff happens. The booking is smarter. I think the other thing to remember about SmackDown is that their idea of who the guy is also the same guy that the audience thinks is the guy. Everyone on Raw that they think are the big stars and the people who deserve the push, the crowd and the audience, I don't think, are that into. So it's always trying to make you believe that these people people are going to be the next big thing. And like, really, what I think on Raw, the people the audience want to see is a bit more. People want a bit more Finn Balor. People want a bit more Kevin Owens. You know, as much as they like Braun Strowman, and he is kind of like almost a star that was kind of organically taken to by the crowd when he was a bit part player in a faction at one point. You know, everyone else is kind of being this guy you have to like, and then all the other people who you already know from the indies and that kind of thing get kind of pushed down the card a
bit. I suppose like the hardcore wrestling fans like you and I and the people who are watching this show, we sort of gravitate towards your Seth Rollins, your Finn Balor and the likes, but WWE and Raw in particular are very much like, no, Roman is the guy that we're
tall man, isn't he?
Roman and Bobby, that's who we really like as our top guys at the moment. I was going to say, I think Braun is, he is a baby face that is over with the crowd that they are pushing as a top star, but he's about the only one.
I
said this after the Superstar Shakeup, but they did quite a few videos about this in the opinion stuff, that Raw's top three guys are Braun, Roman, and Bobby. All three of them are babyfaces.
Yeah.
And like, there's no real then dynamic for them. Because like, Kevin Owens isn't being treated like a top guy. He's being treated like a comedy foil.
Yes, absolutely.
For Braun Strowman to beat up.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, not to go too into detail with that. Like, where does that go with Kevin Owens and Braun Strowman?
Yeah.
Like, because the logical thing at this point, the booking suggests that at some point, Kevin Owens has to beat Braun Strowman. Because it can't just build to a pay-per-view match where Braun Strowman yet again beats Kevin Owens. Because what? There was no story here apart from Kevin Owens got bullied into the ground.
Well, I think you are giving them too much credit, because I think you probably will be building to a cage match at Extreme Rules.
Absolutely, yes.
Where Kevin Owens loses. So that's again, like, so he is effectively the top heel on Raw. That's there all the time. Because you could argue that Brock Lesnar is a baby. He is a babyface or heel depending on who they want him to face for that.
He's just a legit bad man.
He's
though,
just a legit
he?
Badass. Yeah. Exactly. So, and because he's not there, so we can't really count him in this. So that means that Kevin Owens is the top heel on Raw, and that seems ludicrous.
He's a joke,
because he's treated like a joke. And Baron Corbin is probably the number two heel on the brand because Sami Zayn is out injured, and he's like in a mid-card feud with Finn Balor at the moment. So like. And as you, to your point with SmackDown Live, I feel like everyone is working towards something.
Yeah.
Like, Rusev, as a heel, is working to beat AJ Styles and win the WWE Championship. Yeah. And AJ is their top guy on the brand, and he is a face that people really like. And, I mean, I don't know who I would say is the top heel on SmackDown. It's probably The Miz, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's probably The Miz. And then the thing is, like, SmackDown has a much stronger tag division as well. So they've got a lot of heels in the tag division. Like the Usos sort of, they're wobbling on the line now, I think. Like they were definitely heels, and I think they still sort of have a heel vibe. But maybe that's just the way they present themselves. But they are sort of faces. Sanity obviously being heels now, and they're good. Bludgeon Brothers are heels. Like, there's lots of good heels, and that means that you get to have good, like, you can't have a baby face without a heel. So it's stupid to have so many on Raw and then be like, well, there's no one for them to go up against, because all the fights then just have to be about, like, well, I'm the man.
Yeah, I'm the big
But I'm
dog,
also you know? The man.
I'm the
No, no,
here.
You're not what you're saying. This is my garden.
Yeah, exactly. And so the tag team division on SmackDown, I think, is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because they've got Team Hell No, as you said, they've got the Usos, they've got Sanity. The Bar, who we haven't been around for a little while, because I think, like, what I like about SmackDown is they cycle through their stars. So, like, they won't be on TV for a few months, and then the people that are on there get taken off, and new people come in. It kind of keeps things fresh, and they just work house shows instead.
Also, the Bar don't have to be a tag team anymore.
They That's don't. The you cool can push thing. Them
like,
to single stars.
They can come back to being single stars, and they can go for. They can turn up in the US Open Challenge. Like,
exactly,
you know.
Yeah. And you've also got I was going to say the Bludgeon Brothers again, but Gallows and Anderson, the Good Brothers. Mm. So you've got them. You've got all these other tag teams that you can kind of work stuff with. It's a shame that they only are allowed to have one tag team storyline. Well, I suppose now they've got two, because you've got Sanity and the New Day
starting their little feud,
which was really nice. An actual good debut for Sanity.
Mm.
And I just think that their main event scene is really interesting, because once AJ is done with Rusev, he's got all these other challenges that he could possibly have, like Daniel Bryan, if they don't continue the Team Hell No thing, like Samoa Joe, like
who is
The Miz.
Amazing, and like, The Miz.
Yeah.
And then Shinsuke has gone down the card and is going for the US title still, which was confirmed this week.
Yeah.
That he's still coming back and doing that. And obviously, Jeff is, while there's been reports of him being injured, seems okay.
He can turn it on when the cameras are
so,
on.
So, yeah, I mean, he's probably been dealing with some serious injuries for a while now. So. But yeah, I guess with that whole. The dynamic there is just so much better. Like, there's so much more to work with. I think they're just smart acquisition, in the sense that, like, the people that went over and the people they let go, they've done themselves a good deal there on SmackDown.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it's a testament to how good SmackDown is in terms of the people that they have got on that brand. When things like Almas hasn't been on the show for weeks, which is infuriating because it's not the best call-up for him, because it's now 12 weeks and he's only had two appearances. Yeah. But, like, you could bring in Almas for the Open Challenge next week or in a couple of weeks, and you'd be like, oh, sweet, Almas is here. Yeah, that's really good. Because he is a guy that you could genuinely turn into a main eventer on, and a believable main eventer on SmackDown.
So maybe you just whack the US belt on him so quickly as well. Like you were saying about Eric Young, like just sticking that on him last week as part of the sort of Sanity second debut. He could have, he legitimately could hold that belt. Almas could legitimately just come in and straight away have that belt, and you'd be like, that's fine. That makes that mid-card really vibrant.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is, actually, the undercard on Raw is really lacking. Because we were talking about yesterday with Dolph and Seth.
Mm.
It's like, cool, I mean, if Dolph keeps the belt, like, who's then his next challenger?
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, it could...
It's just going to be Seth again.
Or it's Finn. And, like, and you know, we've seen Finn going for the IC title for, you know, the first half of this year with the build-up to WrestleMania. But then, like, well, surely you won't see Finn doing more than that.
Mm.
But it doesn't feel like there's anyone else. Bobby Roode, I guess. But even then, like, he's so cold at the moment that, like, do we want to see a Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler feud?
Yeah, Bobby Roode again. Yeah, another time. Considering,
I forgot they had that.
Well,
that was the whole thing.
The whole thing on SmackDown was that he was just an entrance.
Yeah.
And that pretty much is what
he is now. That's where the record scratch comes from.
He is just an entrance now, because his matches are nothing.
Yeah.
Like, they don't go anywhere. So it's just to get a pop from people singing Glorious.
I think SmackDown really paces itself well as a show. Like, the 2 hours really do just fly by.
Yeah.
I mean, my only criticism I ever really have against SmackDown Live is that the ad breaks in matches really breaks up the flow. So you can never have, like, incredible matches on SmackDown Live, because they always have to have the ad breaks. And when you do an ad break in, you know, the way that WWE do it with an ad break, you just go into rest holds. You just go into a... You work over a body part while the cameras are off, and then the cameras come back on, and the babyface makes its comeback.
Yeah.
You know, so...
It's always flipped over as well. Like, it always flips in the... you go, and we're coming back, and it's like, well, yeah, babyface is on top, and then it flips, and you're like, oh, how did they get in control?
Yeah, I never exactly, know. Yeah, and it's always the same structure. Like, you know when an ad break is coming, and the ad breaks really do ruin the flow of a lot of SmackDown matches.
Yeah.
But I do find that the way they tell their stories is really effective. I'm really enjoying the Asuka Carmella feud at the moment.
Yeah, it's good.
Now that I thought the Money in the Bank ending was absolutely abhorrent, and it just made Asuka look like a complete doofus. But I really like James Ellsworth in his role.
Yeah, I like his sort of being an almost men's rights activist kind of dude. Like, yeah. And they were selling it this week as the sort of the Battle of the Sexes, like the tennis match, Billie Jean King and what's-his-face Riggs.
Yes.
So, yeah, like, I think that's cool, and I think it's good to play him up to that. Also because it's inherently comedic that he's obviously not the picture of masculinity, as you would imagine. But yeah, it's fun to have all that and then him be like, you know,
yes,
kind of being, she's actually, then there's another streak to it where everyone's like, yes, go girl.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Dig, dig, diggity, dig, diggity dog. Quick, dig, dig, diggity,
dig, diggity dog. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So SmackDown Live opened this week with Team Hell No reuniting, and it feels so good. And they came down to the ring for an interview segment with Renee Young,
who said the hug from last week was felt around the world.
It's just how people talk.
Yeah,
it's just that's, how they talk.
That's how
mate.
They talk. Just the hug felt around the and around the folds of Glenn.
But I like this one because Kane essentially explained that the reason he came back to WWE and he came back to SmackDown was because Daniel Bryan was just getting himself into trouble with the Bludgeon Brothers, and he is a guy that's always had Daniel Bryan's back. And instantly, the dynamic between these two, you're like, oh, this is why we really liked you as a tag team 5 years ago. Because Daniel Bryan all of a sudden was just like, last time we were in the ring, you were tombstoning me all around, like pointing to areas, going like, you tombstone me there, you tombstone me there. And then a pause was like, you tried to abduct my wife. And Kane's amazing delivery was just like, no, I tried.
Yeah.
I didn't succeed.
And then it had a bit of a no-yes fight for a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. And like you were just saying then before we came back into to do the main review, that you find with Raw, they spend too much time on doing the story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Raw will spend 20 minutes having people mechanically say scripted lines to each other in the ring to tell a story. Whereas I think SmackDown has a better... Like, SmackDown also, tactical deployment of Renee is always very good in SmackDown. They'll just stick Renee in, who's a very good, like, she's a good interviewer. She gets through the bits quickly, and then a match is set up or started ASAP, which is what you need to do, because the thing you've got to remember about wrestling is that you've got three commentators the whole time talking, and they're not just doing colour. Sorry, they are doing colour. They're not just doing a play-by-play. So, like, they're filling in the blanks. You don't need to have, like, someone come out and say, well, this exact thing happened, and this exact thing happened, and this exact thing happened, and this exact thing happened, because all of that can be recapped by the people who have to fill time while the match is going on.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's what SmackDown does a lot of. A lot of the story is told by the commentary team.
Yeah, I really agree with that. Because, like, Raw has a real awful tendency to start off with a video package that shows you what happened last week, and then Kurt Angle will come out and tell you what happened last week, and then the other wrestlers will come out and they'll sort of say what happened last week. Whereas, like, SmackDown opened.
And then Cole will tell you again.
And then Cole will tell you again, yeah. Whereas SmackDown opened, they had a video package that showed Kane and Daniel Bryan reuniting, and they didn't say what happened last week. They just went straight into their characters of being like, and just falling into their roles of like, mate, we're not, like, we keep saying we're friends, but are we really friends?
Yeah.
And turning that into the characters instead.
They made the time and the space for the segment you want to see, the comedy to come through of that, like this dynamic to just act out and be a new thing.
Yes.
Well, be an old thing, but do new stuff with it. Rather than just going, let's recap.
And speaking of new stuff that comes with, the Usos interrupted this segment. And as soon as the Usos music hits, I'm like, oh, brilliant.
Yeah,
because I get to see an Usos promo, love them, and B, I was like, well, that's going to be a really fun main event of Team Hell No versus the Usos, which it was made by Paige, but they came out and were like, it's so great to see Team Hell No back together, and they're like, are you happy to see him? Hell yeah! And they sort of went through this whole list, and it's like, do they deserve a title shot?
Hell no!
And the Usos, we were talking about this off mic before we came in to record, that there are two teams on SmackDown, in the New Day and the Usos, who I really feel are so heavily involved in the writing that they do for their promos.
Mm.
Because you rightly said that there is no way anyone could write that verbiage for the Usos.
Absolutely not,
Because of their cadence and their delivery. It sounds like it's something that they have come up with.
Yeah, it feels like it's a twin thing. You know, feels like two brothers talking to each other in the sort of the parlance, as you would put it, like of the way they would converse.
Exactly.
It's that's what's nice about it, is that it feels organic, even though you know to a degree it's scripted to, you know, come out there and say it's nice to see you, lovely to have you back, get the little pops for that sort of thing going, and then say you don't deserve a title shot. All you did was hug. We can do a hug. And they have three hugs. And then they're like, that's three title shots. Or was it four hugs or something?
I think they hug. Then it's like, let's do three more.
Yeah. So they have four. They're like, well, we deserve four title shots. No, it's just great promo work. Like, and that's the other good thing about SmackDown, and the reason why it's better than Raw, is that they put people who are good at promos on promos. Like,
yeah, they give them the talking to.
Yeah, they don't just go, off you go, Lashley.
Well, yeah, or, you know, Banks and Bayley.
Yeah, like, well, exactly, yeah.
Do you know what we need to do with these two, who aren't particularly very good actors? Put them in acting segments where they have to do what we think is comedy, but isn't actually comedy.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. Sasha always had a niche of, like, coming out and being able to say, like, she's good at coming out and doing a promo, but in the character of the heel boss is what she was good at promos for. She's not a good babyface promo,
no.
And she's not a good... we have genuine friendship troubles promo.
So the Usos did come out and they wanted a, you know, they didn't think that Team Hell No deserved a title shot. Paige came out and she was like, well, let's have a tag team match for tonight. And if the Usos win, they'll be inserted into the Extreme Rules tag team title match and it'll become a triple threat. And again, this is something that's really nice. It gives the main event stakes. It wasn't just you're having a match and that'll be the end of it. It wasn't just like a showcase match.
We'll settle this in the ring.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Nothing.
It wasn't just like Team Hell No are back, well, let's put them in a tag team so they can win and look dominant. It gave the match stakes. It could have ended up being a triple threat match. I think we all assumed that it wasn't going to end up a triple threat match, but just having that stake there made the match feel more interesting.
I thought
and more
it could
important.
Have ended up as, not to jump too far ahead and spoil the ending, but you know, I thought the cool thing about making it a triple threat match is that you can have the options there are that you can have Team Hell No win the championships by pinning the Usos, and the Bludgeon Brothers get to maintain some of their mystique.
It's very true.
Because
actually,
I think if you have Team Hell No just decimate the Bludgeon Brothers, or even a hard fought match where they win, it removes some of that crushing power that the Bludgeon Brothers have built up.
Yes. So Jeff Hardy cut one of his spooky promos backstage. He said lots of words that really just sort of meant nothing.
He said he was talking about birds of prey for a long time, and he was saying the bald eagle has the ocular acumen to spy its prey from 2 miles away.
It's just nonsense. Like, I know it's
what you can see is when he had his back turned, he's just reading a thesaurus.
Because it's the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. Well, the day after SmackDown was airing. So there was a kind of like their 4th of July episode. Everything was very American themed. So he got a spooky promo.
Including his makeup.
Exactly. Although, hilariously.
It was called a Union Jack at one point, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, Corey Graves hilariously went to say about Jeff Hardy, why has he got a Union Jack paint on his face, and then caught himself and was like, I was just about to say, why has he got the Union Jack? Then I realised it's the American colour, so just ignore that. It's really good that he caught himself, but admitted to the mistake as well. But he was having...
Because they'd been watching the England match tonight, earlier in the evening.
And so they were having, or Jeff was having, an open challenge. He was doing the US Open Challenge mm-hmm. to celebrate Independence Day, and that was answered by The Miz. And I did think at first, like, that's not exactly the most inspiring open challenge.
I literally, the second before his thing, his music played, I was like, it's The Miz.
Oh, really?
I just knew it was going to be The Miz. I was like, it's the most obvious choice.
So I was watching this early this morning, and I thought, I didn't see it going to be The Miz. And when it was The Miz, I was like, nah, it's not I really like The Miz, but I kind of like the open challenge to feature, you know, some new fresh faces. Don't want to see The Miz going for another title.
He's a very safe in that exact spot, though. He hits all the right notes, especially against sort of Jeff Hardy.
Exactly. But then, as the match played out, that's why it was the perfect choice. Because this was very much almost like a Memphis-style match of, like, the cheating heel versus the valiant babyface. Yeah. And it worked really well. And they actually had a very good match. It went through two commercial breaks.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed, like, sitting by the end, I thought it was really fun.
Well, the cool thing about, I think, Miz and Hardy have in-ring chemistry, I think, because they're both... They both sort of do that old school WWE style of wrestling. Like, it's not...
It's so ingrained
in
them.
So ingrained in them. And that's the thing, is like they're not flashy indie stars. They're good workers who do solid spots.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
And they work with more basic. It's not like incredibly complex stuff, but they make it work and they sell it really well. And that was, I thought that was, they just gelled and they kind of fit this exact what you wanted this exact segment to be.
Yeah, so I really enjoy this. The finish saw the Miz try to pin Jeff by putting his feet on the ropes, and the referee saw him, and then Miz celebrated like he had won and kept asking the referee to hand him the belt. So Memphis. Then turns around, Jeff hits the Twist of Fate and a Swanton Bomb, and he retained. I thought it was a very fun TV match. And as you were saying earlier, the story is going around is that he has been, all the reports from live events, is that he's been limping and he's been hidden in six-man tags or in Fatal 4-Ways where he doesn't have to do as much. And he's not even doing the Swanton Bomb as a finish because to try and rest up his body. Apparently he's suffering from a trapped nerve, which sounds like it sucks. Mm. But when the cameras are on, like, I couldn't watch this and say, I think Jeff's a bit injured. Because he's just selling very well. Mm. But he is going to be having a championship match at Extreme Rules, which is now later on in the night, against Shinsuke Nakamura.
Shinsuke Nakamura of the dog biting.
Exactly. Shinsuke is making his return. I'd imagine he'll probably be on TV next week to film something to set up the match. But if not, then he'll have his
first... He was in a small promo in SmackDown this week. But exactly. He'll probably be on actually in the ring next week, I imagine.
Yeah, maybe just attacking Jeff or doing something to just... Yeah. A tiny bit of heat to build up into the match.
I think Shinsuke needs to win this one.
I really do think as well. I mean, we said this last week.
If Jeff is injured as well, you need to, like...
Yes.
Let him out to recover. And obviously, this match had to happen on the 4th of July. Unfortunately, he was the US title holder, so it was kind of like, sorry, man, you've got to paint your face up. You've got to get out there.
Put on your glad rags, lads. Yeah. You're getting out there.
So, unfortunately, you're the one holding the one with a name on it. You've got to go.
So we said this last week. I'm almost certain that Nakamura was set to win the US title. I'm almost certain that he was, when the match was originally announced, he was set to win it then. But then the dog bite injury happens, and that kind of changed plans, which is why we got the Eric Young thing last week, we got the Miz thing this week. Mm. So I think that Nakamura is going to be taking the belt at Extreme Rules. I feel like he has to at this point.
He needs the boost.
Exactly. I think he does need a bit of a boost.
Because the heel turn was an amazing boost for him, I think. You know, the Rumble win was actually probably the start of the Nakamura turnaround from being a bit... It was all a bit flat before that.
Yeah, totally flat.
The Rumble win... was good, but he was still the sort of same old Nakamura. And then those AJ matches, you were a bit like, well, the big AJ match, you were kind of like, oh, you know, actually, that wasn't quite as what I wanted to see. But then the heel turn at the end, you're like, okay,
yeah,
I see this is going somewhere. And then suddenly, that lit the fire under their whole feud, and it was incredible.
Yeah, yeah, really good. In fact, I didn't mention this on the Ramble Club. We were talking about like what matches might have been in Match of the Month, but I forgot the AJ Shinsuke match at Money in the Bank was absolutely awesome.
Oh, that was a stonker.
Stonking match. We then got, excuse me, a New Day pancake eating contest to celebrate the 4th of July, the Independence Day festivities.
This was after a little Ellsworth promo. He said his muscles were bigger, his bones are stronger, and then he said Mella is money and Ellsworth is exquisite. So, which I don't mind as a...
And he's got a new t-shirt as well that says no one is ready for Ellsworth, which is awesome. It's so good. I love James Ellsworth. And I really like these promos as well, because they did do the selfie promos. Nakamura and the Iconics did their selfie promos. Mm. But these were just, a camera was set up and they just spoke directly into the camera and cut a promo. And I really like that. I think it feels like a better promo than if they, you know, when you have like interviewer ask a question and then you look off into the middle distance and you answer.
Yeah, this was like, I need to say this. Like, you know.
Yeah, totally. Because Asuka had one that was really good as well. And then, yeah, this James Ellsworth one was really, really funny.
Well, I guess because the dynamic of that says something more like, you know, you've got the power to sort of wrangle people to come and cut this promo for you. You've got something so important to say that you've got the whole production involved. Whereas the selfie ones are always like, well, I filmed this thing and then I've sent it. I've had to like tweet it to whoever so they might put it in the show. I don't know.
Has anyone got a cable so I can transfer this across?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you on Dropbox? So we did get the New Day pancake eating contest, Independence Day festivities. Byron Saxton was the host of this,
and he had a little hat.
He was so excited. He was so excited. He had a little hat on.
He had a little hat.
This is such a cute little hat.
What a disguise.
And this was very, very funny as well. So the New Day come out, they're all excited because they like eating breakfast foods and pancakes in particular. And Saxton did, and again, this is clearly the New Day doing a lot of the writing. Mm. He was giving them all these introductions. So he said that he was running through Kofi's list of accomplishments.
His accolades.
He was like, he's an X amount of time Intercontinental Champion, an X amount of time US Champion, a 7-time Tag Team Champion, and a former Jamaican Hot Wing Eating Champion, which I thought was a really, really nice. It was that slight pause between Jamaican and eating, which I thought was really, really funny. He introduced Xavier Woods, who brought out an old Xavier Woods gimmick, I believe this is. I think this is what he used to refer to himself as before he joined WWE, which was he was born in a barrel of butcher knives and raised in a forest fire. Which is... See, I mean, you can tell he's a video game and an anime fan. But unfortunately, there wasn't enough time for Big E's intro, which he was very annoyed about.
That was great.
And then Saxton started. They started eating the pancakes, and I think everyone could see where this was going because there's three people in the ring, and there's a three-person faction that's just joined the ranks.
Wellicky, wellicky.
Yeah, exactly. The lights went down, Sanity's music hit, and they attacked them from behind and then gave them a really wicked, brutal beatdown.
Yeah, it was great.
Beat them all up around ringside, showed their dominance, showed how cool they can be, and then Eric Young put Xavier Woods through a table with a diving elbow. And I just thought to myself, why didn't you do this 2 weeks ago?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Or,
yeah.
If you weren't going to do it 2 weeks ago, save it for, like, do it here
then. You could have done, like, 2 weeks ago. They came out and jumped the Usos, right? And then last week, the Usos and Jeff Hardy win clean.
Yep.
Just skip that one.
Yes.
Skip that one.
Yep.
Have them cut a promo or something last week.
Mm-hmm.
30 seconds of your time.
Yeah,
and then this week have this happen. This was great.
This was
the bit
great.
Where Alexander Wolf flings Kofi over the top rope, and there was some great little bits in this.
I really, really liked this beatdown, and I thought it was a nice reboot for Sanity because the last 2 weeks have been like a bit of a misfire, particularly last week. Mm. But this I thought was a nice little reset of them to kind of be like the way I put it in the SmackDown reviews. Like, let's just forget the last 2 weeks happened. We need like the Men in Black little memory thing.
Yeah, the neuralizer.
That's the one. Yeah, and we'll just pretend that this was their debut.
Yeah,
and that's for me now. This is their debut.
And Xavier sold the absolute pants off table. He was screaming.
So good. Xavier Woods is really—he's such a special talent.
Another thing in that. Another thing in that segment, there were dual signs in the crowd, and one said, I came for the pancakes, and another one said, I came for the burgers, which is an IHOP reference. So I thought that was quite good.
There were some really good signs, actually. There was a lad who had a sign that says, "I've been to more events than Brock Lesnar." Which made me laugh. Although there was someone who had a sign that said, "I'd rather be in Charlotte," which I was like, oh, mate. Oh. It's 2018, mate. Oh. It's not the, in the Attitude Era, that sort of thing was acceptable in big air quotes. Mm. But I did like the Brock Lesnar sign. So we got the up next we had Asuka versus James Ellsworth in the Battle of the Sexes. As you said, they showed the original Battle of the Sexes, the tennis match, to kind of like hype this up and kind of explain some little bit of history for it, which I thought was a nice touch. And then James Ellsworth comes out with his amazing T-shirt that says "No one is ready for Ellsworth." Mm. He just looks like such a goober, and it's just like he's perfect for this role.
I almost feel like this feud. If that's what it's to be called, I would have loved to have seen a proper build up to it, rather than it just be like, we've made this, you know, this happened at Money in the Bank, and then they make the match with Ellsworth. Like, because what's cool is Bobby Riggs, isn't it? Mm-hmm. What's cool about what Bobby Riggs was doing in the build up to the Battle of the Sexes, he did all these sort of joke promo things where he was coming out and playing, you know, he's playing tennis with giant rackets, or there are sheep on the court, and he's just, because he's going like, it's going to be so easy to crush this, the best woman in the world at tennis. Yeah. Like, it's going to be so easy, I don't even need to train properly. And then we didn't train properly. And
We could have just had this week to do those sorts of skits and backstage segments and stuff.
You could have just built, you could have built this slowly though, by having Ellsworth having faux matches against, you know, various, not maybe not like actually beating women, but it, faking it somehow.
Yes.
I think, you know, and then that kind of being the build-up, him going, it's going to be so easy and all this stuff, and then Asuka comes out, and then you have the, what actually happened in this is that Asuka hits him immediately. And then he bolts.
You say immediately. He first stalled for time by doing some stretching.
Oh,
and
yes,
it was
nice,
that
was
subtle
good
comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
He put his leg up onto the top rope, and then was trying to stretch but couldn't reach his foot, so he just moved it onto the rung lower, and then was like, ah, now I can reach
it. He did a couple
of
push-ups as well.
Like, but on the third one, really struggled to push himself back up, and I was like, right, well, that's enough of that. It was really funny. Yeah. Someone posted up, I wish I'd kept the tweet up now so I could read it out here, but someone put up a tweet saying, like, all of the people that James Ellsworth has wrestled this year, and it's things like, it's Asuka, Matt Riddle, Nick Aldis for the NWA title, Gilbert, and he's like listing up all these people, and he's like, he really is a man who has lived the dream in 2018.
Yeah, he's had a hell of a year.
He's had a hell of a year.
Yeah.
They said Asuka essentially just beat up James Ellsworth. Carmella was also at ringside, and she kept pushing Ellsworth back in. He'd get knocked out again, and he bolted out the ring, and they got counted out. And I thought, well, that's a bit of a lame finish. I thought it was a bit sucky, but it's because they announced later on that they're going to do a rematch next week. And I was like, well, okay, that actually, if they'd have just ended it with this, then I thought it would have been a really lame finish. But because you had the count out, you've now got the reason.
Well, doesn't Asuka get out to come and get him? Asuka gets out of the ring to come and get him, and then Mella attacks.
No, she got out of the ring and chased after him out of the arena, and then...
It got count. They got both double count out, and then they came back round.
Yes, and then Carmella laid her out against the guardrail.
Yeah, fair.
So, and then later on in the night, Paige caught up with them and said, you can't run away forever, and they're going to have a rematch next week, but with the entire women's division around ringside in a lumberjack match.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, and it's going to be really fun. Like, I was looking forward to it this week, and now I'm looking forward to it even more next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to
it. Other thing that was great this week was the little aeroplane spin.
Oh, God.
He did the aeroplane spin. So Asuka put him on his shoulders, does an aeroplane spin, puts him down. And Ellsworth sells being dizzy and then almost sick for ages. It's so good.
Just sort of going, oh, oh. It was really good. I'm big mark for James Ellsworth. I think he's very good in this role.
Yeah.
Kane is backstage and he's pacing. And Brian walks in and he asks Kane to apologise. And Kane's like, what for? And Brian's like, he pulls out a list of things that he needs to apologise for. Starts going through date by date what you need to apologise for. And
one was leaving a disemboweled squirrel on his doorstep. Yeah.
And eventually Kane was just like, oh, look, I'm sorry. But he's like, you're like a brother to me. And Brian just pauses and like, you set your brother on fire. And I was like, I was hoping Kane was going to say, well, no, I set my parents' graves on fire, and then I chokeslammed my brother into it. But that's not the point right now. I thought this was really nice.
I like this sort of inverse referencing stuff. It's great. Like,
yeah.
It's...
Well, that's why the original Dr. Shelby skits worked. Mm. It's because Kane's got this mad backstory. He's had a mad 20-odd years in WWE. Yeah. So there's so much you can play up from it, being like, yeah, I mean, there was a period when I was really into shocking Shane McMahon's testicles and, you know, hooking him up to car batteries. Mm. It was just a fetish of mine for a bit. Then there was that time where I got really obsessed with Rey Mysterio's mask and the date May 19th. It's like all this random nonsense. I buried my dad in, you know, on all this sort of stuff.
It's just good comedy thought. Like, just going, well, these two people in this scenario make sense. Like, you know, and Daniel Bryan's being actually a bit more straight-laced with this than he was last time, I think, as well. Yeah. Like, because obviously, he was sort of heel last time.
He was
time,
a heel last time. It was like a babyface turn for him.
Yeah, and this time he's going in as the babyface.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
And I much prefer Kane in this role than I do as, like, the third monster in the Royal Rumble match against Lesnar and Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
Which I just felt like in 2018, it wasn't working, Kane being in the main event going for a WWE championship.
No,
but it works fine in this sort of tag team role doing comedy stuff. I'm a big fan.
He doesn't have as much lasting mystique as someone like The Undertaker, I feel, with Kane. Like, you know, when you see The Undertaker, you still get that little, like, I'm excited. And when I see Kane now, and I don't know whether it's just because the costume isn't as good as it used to be.
Yeah.
You're just a bit like...
Oh. Yeah, the costume is
the
costume, really,
the mask particularly is
so rubbish.
Is, awful.
Yeah. I mean, I get why, because I think we talked about this, like, you know, when he came back originally. But, like, when they had the full mask, like in the 1998 to 2000 Kane mask, it was a nightmare to breathe by. Like, because you're just like, like just breathing into your own mouth, essentially, and just like creating hot air back at you. And then you put him in an Inferno match, you're like, how are you breathing?
Yeah, he's not.
Exactly. At least here he can breathe.
He's got
a little
oxygen tube to go down into his boots.
Yeah. Next up, AJ Styles came out to cut a promo before his match with Aiden English, and there was some really great dueling chants for AJ Styles and Rusev Day, because the crowd are into both people in this match. Which
unbelievable.
It's amazing how often, like how few times that can really happen, I suppose. But Rusev interrupts, and he says that this is his first WWE Championship opportunity, as he would say, and then he said he's going to break down the door and evict AJ from the house that he built. So that was some nice work.
It's awesome.
But then my favourite part of this is we were setting up for the match with Aiden English. Rusev goes to get out of the ring and was like, oh, AJ, one more thing. And Aiden attacks AJ and starts the match. And Rusev goes like, oh, never mind. just it was really funny. It was just a, oh, never mind.
Rusev is so good. And he should be such a bigger star than he is. Like,
I know.
Yeah. It's a shame that, like, you know, he was so set on that course and he was so big a while ago and they never pushed him. And then everyone went, oh, wait. And then this Rusev Day thing came along and it reignited it. And it's taken them even longer. It's taken them just as long this time to go, well, maybe we should capitalize on any of this success of this one guy.
Yeah, like, exactly. And like, I think the Rusev Day thing has lost a lot of the oomph that it had when it was really over, like a few months previous, like, you know, in the lead up to WrestleMania and, you know, even before that. Like, it was such a hot thing.
Well, it's a little flat now. Like, I thought it came out a bit flat even on SmackDown when he said, and it's going to be a great Rusev Day.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone was a bit like,
yeah,
like, you know.
It's not as funny as it once was.
Well, it's the Little Britain effect, isn't it? If you repeat the same joke over and over again, eventually, not that funny.
Exactly. But anyway, AJ won quite quickly, locked in the calf crusher and made Aiden English tap out. Fine little match. It makes AJ look good and, like, very dominant. And then afterwards, Rusev pulls him out of the ring, hits him with a Matchka kick, and then locks in the accolade, and AJ is left laying. So it makes Rusev look good.
Yeah,
so I thought this was a thumbs up, very simple but effective booking.
Yeah, nice build, I think.
Yes.
Aiden English didn't do his... My favourite thing of Aiden English is... And I don't think he did this. I might have been asleep through this, but... there's a bit that Aiden English always used to do where he goes on the top turnbuckle, and then they run to push his legs off, and he jumps over them and does a roll and then slides on his back for a bit and then stands up.
Yeah, and then he did that here. They didn't have enough time.
Yeah, so he didn't do that here. But my question is, he's never hit whatever that move is on the top turnbuckle. What is the move he's going for? Because I would love to know.
Well, it's like Ric Flair when he went up to the top rope. It's like, what were you trying, Rick?
Yeah,
it's never worked for you, mate.
What were you going for? But it's so weird that because that spot consistently has happened throughout Aiden's career, and it's I would love to know what he thinks the move is.
Well, it's funny. Like, Bob Holly tells the story in his autobiography. That Kurt Angle always used to have the spot. Like, when Kurt Angle first came in 2000, he always used to do a moonsault and it would miss. That was one of Kurt Angle's trademark spots, that he would never hit the moonsault. And Bob Holly said to him, was like, look, you've got to hit this move once, otherwise no one's ever going to buy into it, so we're going to do it in this match. And Kurt Angle hit it and broke Bob's arm. Sometimes stick to the
problem is because he's not been practicing with a person.
Exactly. Yeah. Stick to the spots you know. The Iconics cut a selfie promo backstage where Peyton Royce said that she was going to beat Becky Lynch tonight, which was not the case because she had a match with Becky Lynch where she lost.
And
it
absolutely,
it was tapping out to the disarmer. Not a particularly great match.
It was clumsy in places.
It was very clumsy in places, yeah. But I did laugh when... So Byron Saxton's complaining that Billy Kay's at ringside. Mm. It's like, oh, she's always just there. And Corey Graves very slyly was just like, you should try getting your best friend Saxton. It's rad. Just a digging little remark.
I love how much Corey Graves hates Byron Saxton.
Funny hell, Todd Phillips buried him during the pancake thing. Because, like,
Byron Saxton... he was like, I'm the host. And they were like, no.
And Tom Phillips was just like, I'm just glad he's not on commentary. Bloody hell, lads. So, this match wasn't particularly great. But what I thought was the big takeaway from this is that they seem to be really pushing Becky Lynch at the moment.
Yeah, she's like, getting a bit of... she's getting a bit of a streak.
Very much so, yeah. So like, that was even more or less the point of the Iconics promo, which is that Becky Lynch is on a winning streak at the moment. Mm. She's got a lot of wins behind her, and she's tapping people out to the disarmer. And on commentary, they were like, she's tapped out Billy Kay, she's tapped out Sonya Deville, she's tapped out Charlotte Flair, now she's tapped out Peyton Royce. She's tapping out all of these women
with
disarmer.
Well, they're calling her a submission specialist as well.
Yeah, so they're really starting to build up this Becky Lynch wave. So one would assume that she'll be the next contender to either Asuka or Carmella when whoever comes out of Extreme Rules
absolutely
as the champion.
So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, it's nice to see Becky Lynch in a storyline.
Yeah,
well,
I know.
And
got all the parts here of a great thing, and you've never bothered to go, oh, well, maybe I'll put them together. It's like not playing with your Lego. Like, it's if you just play with individual Lego bricks by just hitting them on each other. Rather than sticking them together.
That is my new favourite WWE booking analogy.
It's just mashing Lego.
They've got the bricks, they've got the instruction manual, but they're like, no. and then we got our main event of the evening. Oh, Shinsuke Nakamura also cut a selfie promo on Jeff Hardy.
He said, is he a clown? Is he sad? is he ashamed?
Which is nice. But we got our main event of the evening, which was the Usos taking on Team Hell No, their first match in 5 years. Corey Graves said he isn't sure when the last time Kane wrestled. It was just before WrestleMania. It was in that build-up to the Cena Undertaker feud, which I had forgotten about, but was reminded of last week. And I nearly said it in the review last week. It's like, we haven't seen Kane since the Royal Rumble. And I'm so glad I didn't, because that was very, very incorrect. But you could tell that Kane has not wrestled in a while.
Yes.
Because he was all over the show at times.
It was the coldest hot tag I've ever seen.
The same thing. It's like Kane gets the hot tag, which was not hot at all.
Yeah, he gets the hot tag and then doesn't know how to get through the ropes.
He
was just like,
stumble.
Oh,
I can't
hang on. hold up.
Maybe he's
wearing the old mask and he can't breathe.
I don't know which Uso it was. The Uso ran up and essentially had to stop. Like, he ran and was like, okay, he's not ready yet. I'll just stop here and then he can come in and then attack me.
Should have just, I guess, like, thrown a really fake punch. Like, you know, really like...
That he could just no-sell.
A very light punch and then just had Kane shove him over. But, yeah.
Yeah, he was a bit all over the show in the match. Very clunky.
There was a couple of, like, cool... Like, there was a cool double dive from the Usos as well. And they did it in rapid succession. But when Kane took the first one... He stumbled back so far that I was like,
the other one's not going to...
He's not going to hit.
I was like, he's going to dive into no one.
Yeah, and then fortunately, I think he corrected course on the way. But
like, over an angle.
Yeah, oh my God.
But yeah, so Kane wasn't particularly great, but in all fairness to him, I can imagine there's probably a bit of ring rust. He's had other, he's had other commitments on since WrestleMania and since before WrestleMania, really. So he's had other things on his plate. Hopefully they can do a little bit of work with him before their actual tag team match at Extreme Rules, though. But I really enjoyed the double team diving by the Usos. I just think they're such a great tag team. And they had a really good comeback before the match came to an end, which was they did the double splash. Kane caught both of them in choke slams. Yeah. Very well timed, actually, and very well placed. And then he picked them up. Daniel Bryan gave the knee to Jimmy, I think. I think it was. It was Jimmy. And then Kane...
The good thing is they're both as good as each other, so it's almost interchangeable. It's fine.
And then Kane chokeslammed Jay and got the pin. Team Hell No celebrated. And it was funny as well, because Daniel Bryan's giving it the big old yes treatment. And Kane's like... very little yes.
He's doing a Kurt Angle
floppy wrist. Yeah. And Daniel Bryan got very annoyed. He was like, no, if you're going to do it properly. Give us some oomph.
Yeah, and then they got some big yeses.
And that actually fired the crowd up even more. So I thought that was a really nice search. And then the Bludgeon Brothers came out to have, I'd say, a mad awkward stare down. Because they came out and stared. And then the music stopped. and the crowd weren't really reacting. Mm. So, like, the yes chants had stopped, and it was just murmurs, and I was like, oh, this is not a hot way to end this show.
I also just don't think they're the sort of people that would come and do a stare down. Like,
yeah,
I don't, like, you know, like, I don't, they've, nothing about them says they've got the reserve required to just come out and just look at someone.
Exactly.
Like,
surely they'd have come out from the crowd and attacked them. And I thought that actually been a really hot angle to end this show on, which would have been them doing the big old celebration. It's the big Team Hell No reunion match. It's their first match in 5 years. They've beaten the Usos. Mm. And then Bludgeon Brothers just lay them out.
Absolute
and like completely
devastation,
lay,
yeah.
Yeah, complete devastation. Lay them to waste. You don't need to go Eric Young sanity levels of putting them through tables and stuff. But leaving them laying, killing the buzz of their... Like, I think that would have been a really hot angle to end the show on, as opposed to them just staring down with no music playing and the crowd not reacting.
Well, there are so many other ways to say... there's going to be a match here, like, you know, because that's all that was saying is, like, they know there's a match, these guys know there's a match,
yes,
but I don't know, the commentators could have said it and you didn't have to do that and kill the buzz. You could have killed the buzz in a more effective manner.
Yes,
the worst thing to do is kill the buzz and then not build any new buzz. Just go, this is it now,
this is what we're doing now.
Yeah, we're just going to listen to the crickets and then
we've got our Lego pieces.
Cut to the adverts. Yeah, we've got our Lego pieces, now listen to them clack.
Don't step on them. But what did you think of this week's SmackDown?
I actually really liked it. I thought it was, like, apart from a few stumbles of maybe the Peyton Royce Becky match was a little clumsy, Kane was a bit rusty, Bludgeon Brothers was a bit awkward. Other than that, I thought it was really good. It sets up, like, you know, as much as we're joking about the Legos, it does actually build a lot of the Legos in it.
Yeah,
sets them all up, and, you know, they're all in, everything's in position now for stuff to happen, and it feels like stuff is going to happen for once, which is really nice.
Like, at the start of this show, they did, like, the announcements of the matches that are happening tonight, which was AJ versus Aiden English and Jeff Hardy's Open Invitational and the pancake thing and the Team Hell No Uzi thing, and I was like, I'm really into this show already. Like, I'm really excited to see this show. And as you said, apart from a couple of stumbling blocks, I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a really solid episode, and crucially, it made me excited for next week's show, and it made me excited for the pay-per-view matches that are happening on the SmackDown brand. Really excited for Team Hell No versus the Bludgeon Brothers, because I'm really into Team Hell No at the moment. I'm really into AJ and Rusev. I'm really into Carmella Asuka at the moment.
Yep.
Like, I'm excited about these matches that are happening.
Jeff and Shinsuke.
I'm really into Becky Lynch's winning streak's got a moment. It sucks that it's coming at the expense of the Iconics, but it's good to see Becky getting something.
They can suffer, though. That's the thing, is that they're good. Their characters currently are also, you know, they're talkers rather than doers.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Yeah. So I thought this was a really, really terrific show of SmackDown. I very much enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to next week.
Me too.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.